Hey, good people. It's your girl, Fredrika McClary Easley, back with the People Are Blunt special edition, Ask the Attorney, Bryna Dallin. Y'all already see her on screen. Before we go to her, though, a couple quick plugs. So, first of all, merch. Go check us out at thepeoplesecosystem.com and holla at the merch. We have a new line out called Smoke This that is in honor of the 50 plus SKUs that we dropped. And so you don't want to miss that. If you are on IG, our COO Melanie Davis has been rocking it and putting some reels up, looking real good in it. And then also like, subscribe, do all of the good things to keep us coming your way. We are on everything now, right? So we are on YouTube, we are on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Prime Music, all of those good things. The People Are Blunt. We are there. So took care of the business. Mm-hmm. Now let's get to the business. Hey, Bryna, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. You look well to have come back from an international trip. Like, jet lag
is of under eye makeup.
How was it?
Oh, it was great. We went to London for my kids' spring break, and we took my mother-in-law, who'd never really been out of the country. So it was a very active trip, and it was good to be traveling like that again. It'd been a long time.
I miss stamp trips. Like, that was one of my husband and I things. Like, I'm a wanderlust. It's a part of my sign. I am a true Sagittarius. And so we would take at least 2 stamp trips a year. Pandemic, all that good stuff. We have not done so. And so I am really, like, I'm itching now. I feel like I'm itching to go somewhere and do something.
Yeah, it's time. It was, and where we were, at least, it was, you know, everything was open. The tube was a little sketchy because it was pretty packed and people were coughing and you're like, I don't know about this, but other than that, it was great.
You know, coughing is so different now.
It is. It is, because it could have been like, this girl was sitting next to us. Her nose was running. It could have been allergies, but also could have been something else.
Right. And I have allergies. So, like, I'm literally allergic to all of outside. Like, I took the scratch test, my whole back lit up, right? Dear. So I love outside, but I'm allergic to all of it. But even I find myself, as they're lifting these mandates and as they are, as we're supposed to be coming to, like, this herd immunity, if you will, at least of this strain, but just being out, even just walking, I might cough or sneeze and I'm like, I'm good. Like, I have really bad allergies.
Right. Like, you want a sign that says it's not COVID.
I'm like, I'm just allergic to all of outside, people. Like, if I had COVID, I would not be out here with y'all. Like, you know, it's just so interesting. Like, I don't know what normal was going to be for us.
Yeah, we'll take it day by day.
That's it. That's all we can do. So look, let's get into it. I'm so excited to be talking with you again. It's been a minute. Like, there's been so much going on. And so I have so many questions.
All right.
And so let's dig into it. So, the first thing, I think it's pretty clear that we cannot count on the federal government to do anything expeditiously, or anything in, like, the near future in terms of, descheduling, rescheduling, dealing with the legalization of cannabis. We know that the SAFE Banking bill has passed 6 times. Now, it is back in the Senate, attached to the America Competes bill. And so what I've been noticing is that some states are taking, you know, this into their own hands and trying to move the needle. I didn't realize this at first, but not only is cannabis a Schedule 1 federally, like, not only is it federally illegal, but some states that have regulated mm-hmm. is still, you know, within their state statutes or within their state scheduling, it is still scheduled there. And so let's talk about that, because I know Michigan recently, they're moving at the state level to deschedule cannabis. Mm-hmm. And that just blew my mind. It's like, how do you regulate and it's still scheduled in the state?
Yeah, I think part of that is really a cleanup measure. And we see this a lot with state legislatures. I am totally in any sort of positive cannabis legislation that can pass. I am all for it, you know, and it's going to be a groundswell state by state by state, the more we can get. So I am all for it. But practically speaking, this probably isn't going to make much of a difference. Oftentimes you will see that when a law passes, that law may impact 50 other areas of state statutes. And these and the people that are making the laws, they are not necessarily thinking about all of those things. So there is oftentimes a lot of cleanup that has to happen. You know, in addition to that, I think if like a state court were to look at this issue, they would see a state that has already decriminalized cannabis. They've already commercialized cannabis. So they would likely conclude that this was essentially descheduled anyway. It's great to have the acts because I think every forward step is positive. Yeah. But in terms of practical effects, I don't know how much it's going to have, particularly when we still do have federal prohibition. And that is something that, organizations within the state can always fall back on if they want to take negative action. What you really want to see is, and I think we're going to talk about this in a bit. I know you wanted to talk about employment, but specific statutes targeting specific issues. For example, employment, you can't fire people for using cannabis, that kind of thing. Like you really do need that kind of specific thing to address some of the issues that we're seeing at the state level. I think it's great to deschedule. Yes, everyone should be doing that. In a lot of states, when they do legalize, they automatically deschedule it. But I think probably because Michigan was a voter, that was a ballot initiative. There probably is a lot more cleanup in that state that might have that as compared to a state where the whole thing happens legislatively. So yes, totally in favor of it. But in terms of, you know, practical effect, while we still have that federal prohibition, it's, you know, I don't know how much it's going to have.
So let's go over to the worker protections. But the one thing that the articles I read did mention is in terms of, cases with parents, mm-hmm. Parental issues, worker issues, things of that nature, how it could have an impact with those. It could be something else that can be referenced.
It could have an impact. Like, I mean, In states where legalization has occurred, we are seeing some like freak cases where kids are getting taken away for simple, you know, cannabis use or medical cannabis use. They still can get if somebody's got a problem with abuse of any substance, you know, a kid can get taken away. But if there's no abuse going on and it's just, you know, the kind of use that is normal and, you know, you can still be an awesome parent. We really need to see, unless Michigan's law said any parent using a Schedule I drug is, you know, could get their kids taken away, that kind of thing, then this descheduling would definitely help with that. Okay. Better still is a law that says no parent, and a lot of states already have this, but no parent shall get their, you know, child taken away simply for use of cannabis.
Right.
Like there's got to be something else in terms of abuse or something of the substance, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, it could help with that. And it could help with housing if there are housing laws that say schedule, if you are in possession of a Schedule I drug, you can get evicted. Where it is still problematic, though, is housing that relies in any way on federal
funding. Yep.
They're always going to have an exemption right now until the state, I mean, until the federal government legalizes cannabis. So any sort of like, you know, federal housing like that, it's just not going to matter there.
Yeah. No, I mean, there was just a case, I believe it was in Arizona, where it was appealed and the mother came out the victor in this case because an agency tried to claim neglect because when the baby was born, now this mother is a medical cannabis patient, has anxiety issues, had some other things that were documented. And so as opposed to taking those medications, which can actually be harmful to the baby, are known to have or can have negative effects when you are pregnant. She was using cannabis, like she was utilizing, consuming cannabis. And so initially this agency tried to place a neglect charge on her. And so it wound up getting thrown out, but it had to be appealed and everything. And from that, the panel of the state Supreme Court judges stated that in this instance, because she's a medical cannabis patient, that her use should be seen the same as any medicine that is prescribed during pregnancy, that was seen. And there were some other, you know, some other medications that were also found in the baby's, I guess, bloodstream at birth as well. So they said that, you know, all of that should be lumped in. But I just think of those kind of cases and how and why this is important.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're really seeing courts, you know, across the country really go at it from very different perspectives. So that was the result from this court in Arizona, and a different court in the same state could have had a different outcome. So there's really no necessarily rhyme or reason. You're going to see very disparate results on these issues, depending on the court.
Yeah. And that's troublesome, but I think, you know, the more that we can make sure that we have these reference cases, these cases to refer to with decisions that are in support of the normalization of cannabis, I think it's important, right?
Every bit helps. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So let's get into these worker protections, because I have issues with this. Mm-hmm. So there is this double standard, if you will, in terms of, you know, cannabis consumption and let's say like alcohol, right? Because we all know that you're not supposed to show up to work drunk. Everybody knows that, right? No one is arguing against having regulations around how you enter the workplace. Mm-hmm. There's some gray areas there in terms of people who are medical patients and need, you know, and use their consumption for their daily wellness practice and regimen. But my concern is people being held accountable to like drug tests, things of that nature. And this is not based on them coming to work, appearing to be inebriated. And so that ties in what they do off the clock.
Yes, it does. And it's terrible. Yep. It is. I totally agree with you. I think that any sort of action against an employee should be solely based on what occurs at the workplace. You know, are they performing under an influence such that they can't do their job, right? Like that's what it should be. And yet that's not what our employment laws by and large provide for. You as an employer, generally speaking, can fire someone for any reason and no reason at all, right? Unless there is some sort of state or federal protection that would prevent that firing, or unless you have a contract that says something specific, or there is a policy at your workplace that says something specific. Other than those things, you can get fired for any reason and no reason.
At will employee.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, unless you have a union, right? If you have a union, then you know there's a guarantee there for.
Then there can be certain protections there that'll be bargained for. But other than that, and this really is a legacy of the stigma that cannabis has had for so long, that it is treated that companies are drug testing. which is so unnecessary. Like, unless you've got a reason to suspect that that person is intoxicated and can't do their job. And I would say that's like around, like, I'm using heavy machinery or driving or something. Like, there's just no reason to drug test at all. But to lump cannabis in with all these other substances and treating it the same and then firing people for it is really shameful. And there, right now, that's why we really need the states to step up and say, with very specific laws that prohibit the firing for simple cannabis use. That's what we really need here. And again, there's always going to be a carve out for, for employers that are somehow tied into the federal government. They're still going to have an out there. But for everybody else, having laws in place in each state that is prohibiting the firing for simple, detection of cannabis in your system is really, really important. And, given that we still have many states that haven't even commercialized cannabis yet, you know, we're a long way off from it being treated that way across the board.
Absolutely. And I feel like this is another area of disparate treatment, because alcohol does not last in your system, your bloodstream, right, as long as cannabis does. And in some instances, and again, it depends on, how they're testing, but if you are around cannabis and if they're doing hair samples, say, for instance, right, mm-hmm, there could be traces on your follicles.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's not going to matter, because they can fire you for any reason and no reason. And the same goes for CBD, where, we're definitely seeing folks fired because they are failing drug tests. And the only reason they failed that drug test is because they were using a product that's perfectly legal at the federal level. But because that, if they're using a full spectrum CBD product, there's going to be traces of THC. You take that product every day, it's going to start to build up in your system, and you are definitely can test positive, even though you have not been intoxicated at all. Not that that should matter. And people are getting fired for, CBD use as well.
It just blows my mind. Also, the hypocrisy of it all, because mm-hmm, the plant is okay for you to use the generated tax revenue, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's okay. It's okay for it to add jobs to your state. Like, we saw definitely during the pandemic that cannabis added thousands of jobs at a time where people were being laid off and let go of left and right. So we want all of the benefits, like, we want all of the positives, but then when it comes to these areas, we're still leading with a stick approach.
Yeah. And it really is employer by employer. And just, I am hopeful that every, day, week, month, year that goes by, the stigma will be lessened and lessened, and more employers will be understanding that, hey, there's no reason to test for cannabis at our company. Do we need to do any drug testing at all, really? And should we ever be firing anyone for cannabis use? There's more and more, just at an individual level, I can tell you just from my own, interactions, there's more and more and more companies that are understanding that none of those things should be happening. And so we just need to, keep moving forward. But the best thing here is to get states to pass laws very specifically prohibiting firing for this, just like you can't fire someone for their gender or the color of their skin. Like, it should be the same thing, and we need a specific law for that.
So, one, that's a plug, everyone. Hey, talk to your representatives, your local and your state representatives. They need to know that this is an issue. They need to know that this is something that you feel strongly about. Two, in terms of an individual level or like a workplace level, what advice would you have for someone who, whether they're in a fully regulated area or whether they're using CBD, right? Whether they're using mm-hmm. something that is federally, legal at this point, You can get CBD in CVS.
Right.
You know, you can get CBD products in CVS and in your local stores now. So what advice would you have to them and to someone who kind of runs up on this issue?
That is such a tough question because I really think it is very dependent on the type of company you are working at, right? Okay. I could see, unfortunately, certain companies, depending on the culture and leadership, where you don't even want to bring this issue up because then they're going to be like, wait a second. So are you using this? Unfortunately, like it's like you really gotta consider, the type of company that you're at. In a perfect world, this would be something that employees could bring to their HR or their management. And hey, let's have an honest discussion around these issues. If it is a company, and like I said, we're seeing more and more companies that are staying, hands off on these issues. Yeah. But if you are the kind of company that is drug testing, maybe that can be approached in a very neutral way. Like, hey, why is this happening? What is the objectives of, and that's something that, as attorneys, employment attorneys will walk through with their employers. So why are you drug testing? Yeah. What are you hoping to get out of this drug testing? And oftentimes they'll quickly see that, hey, the only purpose of this is to police off hours behavior. And oftentimes employers at that time will understand, hey, I don't need to commit the time and the resources to this because it's not important to me what my employees are doing off the clock, as long as they can do their job when they're here. So that's kind of, can be a light bulb moment for employers who may be just doing drug testing because, hey, we've just been doing it forever and we're just going to keep doing it. To really think about why they're doing it. Like if you're not operating heavy machinery or driving or anything like that, like why are you drug testing? And policies really should be modernized so that if drug testing is happening at all, it would only be because, and I, even then I don't think it should be, but it only be because there is, behavior being displayed at the workplace that indicates someone is intoxicated, whether it's on any substance. There should be no difference between alcohol, marijuana. Like if you're too much of something that you can't do your job, that's a different story. But unless you're at that point, there should be no firing. So hopefully, if folks are at a place where they're comfortable having that conversation with HR or management would be a good first step.
I think that that's great. Being proactive, as opposed to, and I think that this is something, once a state is to a point where they have fully regulated, both medical and adult use, I feel like this is something that should be on the table, or like as mm-hmm. as you're going along in that process, that this is something that should be on the table. Like, let's not wait until we're in the thick of it and that, we're actually like causing harm, and like we're damaging lives. Like, let's have these conversations.
And there's powers in numbers. So, get a group together to bring this issue up.
And I think, and we've talked about this before, that oftentimes rules are made for the outliers. Oftentimes rules are made because one person did something, 30 years ago, or someone did something recently, and it's like, oh, we have to crack down on everyone. It's like, no, again, we're adults here. Let's address what needs to be addressed, and everyone else doesn't need to be penalized, for that. And I think it's also important that it's not directly tied to medical use, because there are people who self-medicate, right? So that's why I think it's important for it to be, it's important for adult use to be included in this conversation. And that also,
100%.
And that people just get to live their life. Like, when I'm off, I want to be off. Like, people should be able to live their lives comfortably when they're off, when they're not on the job, on the clock.
Amen.
Amen. So speaking of that, right? Like, speaking again of, things that states are doing, things that states can do, because, at the federal level, we are just so poo-poo. We're just so poo-poo at that. So we're seeing, so this was written into New Mexico's actual legislation, right, around adult use, is that the governor has the authority to enter into these interstate and actual international for New Mexico, these international agreements and pacts and things of that nature for delivery and for the transporting of product. We're also seeing that introduced in like California and Oregon. My assumption is that because, you know, the supply and demand is out of whack right now. Like there's, you know, there's more being cultivated than there is in terms of like retail and like places to sell. And that the limit of only being able to do that within your state, because we're still federally, you know, illegal, is greatly like impacting especially small businesses. So what's your take on this?
You know, I think kind of going, you know, the same as what we talked about at the beginning of this segment, any little bit helps here. So yes, let's get these interstate PACs, like let's get this into law. But again, the federal law is going to trump everything. So I would, you know, I think it will be a, like when we start seeing cannabis go across state lines, I think it'll be very interesting to see how the federal government reacts. I'm hoping they will do nothing. But they might not, because that's really stepping it up, right? You've got your federally illegal activity within your state lines, but once you're crossing the border, that's now you've kind of opened the door to just like heightened scrutiny. I do think the risk is lower, obviously, when you've got direct neighbors with the same laws as you, right? Because the local and state police, you know, they're most likely not going to do a thing. So you really would need a federal action there. Whereas, you know, transporting it through a prohibition state is a totally different ball of wax and very dangerous.
So I think the thing that I'm concerned about, and you and I spoke about this a couple of months ago, but there was a case in January with Imperial Logistics. And so they actually filed suit because, you know, they were, I guess, you know, a case was built up. They were being, you know, investigated, you know, it was this undercover mm-hmm. investigation that went on for about 6 months. And they were, so Imperial Logistics transports, you know, think of those Brink trucks or those armor trucks that, you know, go from bank to bank. So they're transporting, you know, funds, but these are legal funds, right? Like this is from regulated activity, but they were stopped. And asset forfeiture was used, like the funds were confiscated in transport. And so that kind of raises a flag for me, specifically because we know in asset forfeiture, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but that an actual charge doesn't even have to be issued. You know, it's
brutal.
It's a
money grab. Yeah, that's all it is. And the way to avoid that right now, unfortunately, is to never drive through a prohibition state with cannabis funds. You know, that's really the only way right now to avoid that issue, because there is a lot of money, and these you know, these local districts and police forces, they can use that money. So I imagine that it is extremely, extremely tempting for them to, when you've got funds that maybe were legal at the state level when they were in a different state, but the second they crossed into your state, well, now you're talking about money laundering, and you know, I'm sure there are other charges that they can think of. Not to mention the federal. They're gonna stop you. I'm not surprised that that's happening. That kind of money grab is happening, and like the only way to avoid it, unfortunately, is to not drive through prohibition states, which makes it, you know, which makes it pretty hard for some of these more fledgling multi-state operators who are starting to have, you know, operations in multiple states. So maybe they've only got, you know, they've got their bank in one state. And so they're doing that, particularly, you know, out west, there's, you know, you've got your states that are prohibition, like, all over. And so you are crossing over. So that is very dangerous. You know, I would hope, you know, I do think that there are arguments for why the state police in the prohibition state, which I forgot what state it was that did that, but I obviously it was a prohibition state, for why they can't seize it. Like, they can't enforce federal law. If that's a local state, they got to rely on their own state laws. And arguably, I could see arguments for why their state laws wouldn't apply to that money that crossed over. So I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with that case, because I do think they've got a chance at least of getting their money back.
You know, the sad thing is, if it is a smaller business, right, like that does not have the discretionary funds to plug into fighting this legally, then they're just at a loss, right?
They're just out, right? Because it is so expensive. Like, if you know, if it was $100,000 that got confiscated, well, now you really got to think about, hey, how much is this going to be to fight? And it may very well not be worth it if you don't have the funds. 100%. That's definitely an issue.
And that could be the difference between them being able to, you know, be successful and move forward or not. Because, you know, the reality is most cannabis businesses that are not attached to, you know, like large multi-state operators and things of that nature, you know, they are not profitable at this point.
No.
Some of them are breaking even, but for the most part, a number of them are struggling. So 100,000 may not be a lot in the grand scheme of things to some. But for others, like, I mean, this is them making payroll. This is the difference.
Absolutely.
And the lights on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's terrible. Yeah. Need to spend more gas money, more mileage, avoid those states.
I, you know, and it's also, I think the catch-22 here is that we still don't have safe banking, right? Mm-hmm. We don't have the moratorium. We don't have safe banking, which means that, you know, these businesses are already operating as cash only businesses for the most part. And then there are some banks, right? There are some banks that are allowing, you know, cannabis businesses to utilize their services. But it may not be in your state. You may have to go out of your state in order to have somewhere safe outside of a safe to put your money. So, you know, it's just, it's like, what do you do?
Yeah. Yeah. We need banking reform, but at the end of the day, we need the federal government. We need a change at the top. We need this to be federally legal for these problems to truly go away.
So do we think the Biden administration is going to like move forward with this? I know you don't have a crystal ball.
No. I don't know. Maybe safe banking could happen. That one could happen. That one could happen. Anything else? No.
I don't even see, you know, I want to be optimistic, but with this Senate, with the makeup of this Senate, like, yeah. I just don't see it. And then going into midterms, like, here's the thing that I fear, and not trying to get into like a whole party thing, but you know, initially this was the Dems issue. I feel like they're losing it to the Republicans. I feel like people like Rep Mace and others are making this their own. And I feel that there's going to be a shift in power for the midterms, because I don't necessarily feel like people who came out and made that difference in those like huge urban areas for the presidential race, that they've been given something to fight for in this midterm.
Yeah.
And so where does that leave us?
Yeah. Vote. Just vote.
And vote on your issues. Like, here's the thing. I mean, you know, oftentimes, and I even feel like this, that it's like a vote for the lesser of evils, right?
Yeah.
It's like, who do I feel is going to screw me over less? Like,
right. I know. I've definitely held my nose and voted a number of times.
But it's important, right? It's an important thing to do. And we know it matters, which is why they're like gerrymandering districts and why, you know, they are adding all of these voter suppression bills. All of this craziness. So we know, I mean, just from those things alone, it's clear that your vote matters. Otherwise, they wouldn't be wasting time trying to make it more difficult for you to exercise it.
Period.
All right, Bryna. Well, do you have any parting words for the people? That those are my questions for this week or this installment. But do you have any parting words for the people? I mean, especially in regards to, you know, just protecting yourself as states are figuring this out, as the federal government is, you know, sitting on their hands or whatever.
We've all got to keep advocating. We got to keep speaking up and not stop talking about these issues. Always keep them at the forefront, push them forward. Every little bit helps.
Awesome. All right, good people. Well, look, Bryna, we appreciate you. We thank you for coming on, as always, and bringing clarity and bringing perspective to the issues that, you know, our viewers and listeners, as well as myself, primarily myself, selfishly, but the things that I have questions about, the things that I want to know. And so, again, people, like, subscribe, do all of the things. We are everywhere. Check out the merch, thepeoplesecosystem.com. And we'll see you next time on The People Are Blunt, special editions, of course, with Bryna Dahlin.
Thank you.